The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this May 5th. 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio as the plans have changed just a little bit. Got a little bit of a late pivot, a little bit of an audible here this afternoon. Jacob Goins is out of the studio here this afternoon. He will be joining us on the phone lines here to start the show in just a few moments. But my goodness, do we have so much to talk to you about here this afternoon. We got football. We got SEC strength of schedule, the topic that we started to get into yesterday. We're going to break that down here today. Where does Auburn rank? Where does Auburn's opponents rank? And who sits in the top five that we're not necessarily buying? We also have some portal news in terms of Auburn football as well as a commit, as well as some portal news that we'll be able to dive into here this afternoon, and a whole lot of baseball as well. A deep dive into all three games in College Station as Auburn yet again wins the series, their fifth straight conference win. We'll talk about each of those three games and some of the storylines that took place within them and how this Auburn team continues to build not only its resume, but its confidence in there as well. We'll talk SEC standings. We'll talk Hoover and where Auburn is set up if the tournament ended today and how much movement there could still possibly be in terms of Southeastern Conference standings before that tournament gets started. We also have a special guest of Auburn baseball joining me on the phone lines to start hour number two. We'll talk about all of that here coming up in just a little bit, but all of that right here between 2 and 4 on ESPN 106.7. And if you would like to be a part of today's show, the phone lines will officially open at 2:30, from 2:30 to 3 here this afternoon. But we go to them to start the show and hear a very familiar voice, I think it's safe to say, here on the phone lines. Jacob, how awesome is it that you're able to call from the jail cell and use your one phone call to talk to us right here and talk a little bit of sports on ESPN?
Yeah, I'm taking the show on the road. I just didn't tell you exactly where I was taking the show. Jail cell, golf course, Interstate 85, whatever you want to, you know, whatever we want to tell the people that we're doing is fine. But yeah, I hate that I can't be in studio, but we're going to make the show happen regardless. I mean, we're committed to making this thing go from 2 to 4. So yeah, we have a ton to talk about. I know you're going to dive into a lot of the baseball conversations, a great interview coming up today, maybe two interviews today. But happy to be a part of the show, of course, so just over the phone this afternoon.
Man, that's so crazy that you and Jacob Hillman got to go play golf this afternoon, and I just didn't hear about it until later.
I did take a celebrity shot about 5 minutes ago, and it did not go well. So the one swing for the day is done, it's over, and we will not be doing that again.
You didn't get any of the practice warm-up. You knew there was going to be a celebrity shot eventually. There wasn't any sort of pre-planning. It wasn't a hosel, was it?
No, it wasn't a hosel.
Okay.
But I, Christian, I'll give you one guess of where my tee shot went.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't, you're not on a par three. You're on the driver hole.
Oh, it was driver. Yeah. So guess where it went.
I'm going to guess if you walked straight in that little short grass, it's not there.
Yeah. If you go straight out and then take a 90 degree turn to the right.
Man, that's crazy that you still drive at 300 yards. It's just 150 yards straight and 150 yards right.
Well, look, there's a fairway over there somewhere. I can play it if I'm lucky enough, if it has an opening and there's no trees. So Again, I hate that I can't be there, but yeah, happy to get the show started with you. And I know we have some fun conversations. One that we tried to get to it yesterday. Yeah. We were just poor at getting to it, and fun to start the show with a little college football action.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, well, you mentioned it. A mistype yesterday made it to where 2026 scheduling. We talked about 2016 scheduling for quite some time, but a really fun conversation, man. Had a lot of fun and a lot of activity in the text box as well. Unfortunately, again, with Jacob out of the office, no text box, at least that I can look to, unless he's able to find it while he's on the phone lines for a little bit. But you mentioned it. Talking about SEC football, the strength of schedule rankings, all 16 teams from the toughest to the easiest. This is an article written by College Football News that did their sort of little opinionated math problems, it felt like. And so, you know, that immediately means that we're not going to be great at it. But it talks all about strength of schedule and how they all did their spring or their post-spring rankings. And for every single home game that that team gets, it's that many points. Every time they go on the road, it's half of those points. And so they were able to do a little bit of math and a whole lot more than we are used to. But let's dive into it, my friend. Talking about the easiest schedules and the hardest schedules in the SEC. And according to this article, says that Arkansas has arguably the toughest schedule in all of Southeastern Conference play. And it may not even be because of the Southeastern Conference. It's because of, man, that September 12th date against Utah, where they go on the road to Rice-Eccles Stadium. You also mentioned Texas, Georgia, LSU, Texas A&M, Auburn, Vanderbilt, South Carolina. I mean, so by no means is this an easy schedule. It's actually listed as the hardest. And then you throw a team like Utah right in there as well. And it's really, really hard for the Razorbacks to find a lot of success in 2026.
I mean, I feel like over the last 10 or 15 years, though, Christian, hasn't it always been Auburn and Arkansas that are always right there with the toughest schedules, not just in the SEC, but in college football? I mean, this dates back to the SEC West days, right? Where it was, if you're Arkansas in particular, you played Auburn, Alabama, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, LSU. Like, you played all of these teams, and it was just like, man, it's a freaking gauntlet every year. And then if you happen to schedule a halfway decent team. I think they played Oklahoma State a couple of years ago, in non-conference play.
It was a really gross game that went to double overtime, did it not?
Yeah, I mean, I think they played them. They've played Memphis. Like, they've played some. Didn't they lose to Memphis last year? I feel like that's the
case. They did.
But regardless, they always seem to have one of the toughest schedules in the country. And now that even the SEC West isn't a thing, even then, they're still playing a combination of teams from the West, and then they're always going to catch a Florida or a Georgia, South Carolina when they're good. Like, Kentucky is not always easy. So, yeah, no surprise that that Arkansas is near the top of the toughest schedules in college football. And, man, that makes it so tough for any coach that they try to bring in, because it's like, hey, we want you to have success, and we want you to have success fairly early, but here's a top three toughest schedule in the country every year. Hope you can figure it out with limited resources and you know, limited availability in Arkansas.
Yeah, good luck here. If you can get 3.5 wins, if you can hit that over right there, you're in good shape. You move on to second and third, and it's two that are big-time rivals, and they're playing two big-time rivals. Oklahoma at number two, Texas at number three. And again, these are not only because of the Southeastern Conference schedule. When you look at Oklahoma, they have Georgia, they have Texas, they have at Missouri, at Florida, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Kentucky. But man, there's another game in there, and that is September 12th, where they get the return trip to Michigan. And that should be a very, very fun matchup, a very fun game, a new coach up there, a whole lot of excitement. I saw that they were able to sell out their spring game, and so it feels like there's a lot of things going up there in Michigan. Oklahoma, the return trip, they sit at number two. And then Texas following suit, they're at number three, where they host Ohio State in week one to get the season started.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma going to the Big House and return trip to Michigan. Kyle Whittingham, the new head coach up there, they have a ton of time. I mean, they expect to be immediately competitive. And has year one college football playoff expectations, but they definitely have expectations to kind of wash away the bad taste of what Sherrone Moore left for them, right? In a terrible situation that was, and I don't want to speak directly on that, but just for Michigan in general, of trying to get rid of that and trying to kind of bury that, if you will. Kyle Whittingham is expected to be everything that they've ever wanted there in Ann Arbor. And so, yeah, Oklahoma making that return trip. Plus, it seems like since they've joined the SEC, they've gotten the short end of the stick in the shaft, if nothing else. But man, they always have a tough schedule. They always have tough teams and tough locations at tough times. And then Texas right up there with them. And, you know, those two teams don't have the previous pull of the SEC East and the SEC West. Well, we used to have it this way, and it used to be this way. Oh, they came from the crappy Big 12 where they played Kansas and TCU in back-to-back weeks rather than playing Florida and Auburn in back-to-back weeks. And so it's a little bit different of a ball game for those two squads, but not surprised that they're at the top of the hardest schedules in the SEC, the hardest schedules in the country. And, you know, for Texas, they have national title expectations with Arch Manning, Cam Coleman, that defense that they have there. Oklahoma, I don't know what their expectations are, to be quite honest with you, but the idea that they have one of the nation's toughest schedules is not surprising by any means.
No, you talk about first-year head coaches right behind them at Florida. Again, as we're diving into the SEC football strength of schedule rankings, and we're going from toughest to easiest, and you have Florida now, Jacob, at number four, and there's always a gauntlet. You mentioned Auburn, Arkansas. You feel like as of late, Florida has been in that schedule, and you feel like it's almost been Auburn pointing that finger and halfway laughing through exhaustion of, okay, I'm glad that you took some of that schedule now since we don't have to get everybody. And not necessarily diving into Florida as much, but when looking at it, it's something that I completely forgot about because they play Texas on October 17th, which is listed to be their toughest game of the season. Their second is October 31st, taking on Georgia. But that is not at the world's largest cocktail party this year. That's at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. They do that in 2026, a 2027 game in Tampa, and then it goes back to Jacksonville from 2028 to 2031. Apologies, but I had completely forgotten that they were moving some of these games around, some of the locations around. And yeah, you feel like that does make it that much more difficult because although it was in Jacksonville and the stadium was 50-50, although they hadn't had too much success there, you felt like it at least gave a little bit of an upper hand to Florida. My goodness, now you're going to the dog's backyard to essentially play a neutral site road game.
Well, Christian, you're a Georgia kid, so you may be able to speak on this. You're not a Georgia fan, but you grew up in that state, so you may be able to. I clarify.
Thank you.
Don't worry, I don't need you getting kicked off Auburn radio. You may be able to speak on this a little bit more than I can. I mean, that game needs to be played on campus. I'm sorry. Georgia, Florida, any big rivalry game. Imagine if Auburn and Alabama, it used to be played in Birmingham. We know that. Way back in the day when it got its origin, it played in Birmingham, and then it was a huge deal for obvious reasons when it got moved to Auburn and to Tuscaloosa. But for what reason, other than it being cool to play the Georgia Florida game and even the Texas Oklahoma game on neutral site? Like, I get it. Texas Oklahoma's got the state fair, and you've got Georgia Florida's the largest cocktail party and whatever. But it's like, okay, that's cool. Let's put this in Gainesville. Let's put this in Athens. Let's put this between the hedges. Let's put this in the swamp. Like, who cares that it's in Atlanta? Nobody wants to go to Mercedes-Benz. It's a nice stadium, but it's a true neutral site. Take the fans out of it and just play the game type of atmosphere. And that's not what college football is about, in my opinion. And so with that game in particular, you mentioned Florida's got Texas on that schedule. They've got a couple of tough games. I mean, it's going to be an uphill battle in year one there in Gainesville, but I mean, they got their guy. They got Summerall. They got the guy that they wanted, a guy that Auburn wanted for quite some time. And so they will not be overly lenient, I guess, for what they get in year one. Anything above six wins will be fine, but my goodness, that's all they've had for quite some time. look, if that's a Florida team that's able to find a new identity, to find a new confidence, and start to win 7-8 and flirt with 9 wins and be just a pest, if nothing else, in the SEC, man, watch out for the Gators in that schedule. Because, yes, it's tough, but they also have big names that they can take down and be a home wrecker in 2026.
October 31st, Georgia taking on Florida in Atlanta. And for those wondering, Athens is about an hour and 40 minutes from there. But basically, a road game for the Florida Gators. And am I okay to claim this, Jacob, that you said that Mercedes-Benz is not a home stadium? Because for what I can remember, it is a home stadium.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn has a home game there against Baylor. I mean, I expect there to be 99% Auburn fans, right? I mean,
yeah, Nova's going to circle Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah, I expect there to be 85,000 Auburn fans and only 2,000 Baylor fans in Mercedes-Benz on that first Saturday in the college football season. Yeah,
I'm Christian Griffin. He's Jacob Goins joining from. Is it what hole are you behind here this afternoon?
We're on hole 9.
Okay.
Yeah, we're on hole 9, going right back up the clubhouse. We're just off the par 3, going up. One of the most difficult horses on the RTJ Lake course is, you know, number 9. You got the bunkers on the left. You got to go over those trees on the right. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the pin is placed right behind the bunker going up to the green. You know how tough that
always
is.
Yeah, the three-tiered green where if you miss it 4 feet right, you're all the way back down and you're chipping, and then you leave it short again. And next thing you know, you have a double putt. And it's like, no better way to go about it. But talking about the SEC football strength of schedule rankings, diving through the top 5, we'll kind of run through the middle, but I want to be able to highlight Auburn in here as well in segment number 1. Rounding out the top 5, though, is Alabama, listed according to College Football News with the 5th toughest schedule in all of the SEC. You have road games at LSU, at Tennessee, at Vanderbilt, at Kentucky. You then have Georgia, Texas A&M, South Carolina, Auburn at home. You also have Florida State in there as well. I would imagine it's a very different Florida State team, but a team like Ashton Daniels getting the starts over in Tallahassee can maybe spark that group just a little bit. Your thoughts on Alabama being the 5th toughest schedule in the country, or in the SEC, rather?
Yeah, 5th toughest in the SEC isn't overly crazy. Again, they still have a lot of their SEC West common opponents. And, yeah, Florida State, we expect them to be much improved. And, look, Alabama struggles with Ashton Daniels early, if that's the case, that when they get there. And look, I just don't have confidence in Kalen DeBoer as a head coach. I mean, what has he shown, Christian, as a head coach at Alabama in terms of X's and O's, in terms of game plan, in terms of adjustments, in terms of just get your team through it? I haven't seen it. I think they were the better on paper team in the first round of the playoffs last year, which is what got them through. But then, man, they got embarrassed by Indiana in the Rose Bowl. On the national stage, they flew all the way out of California just for 3 points. And to me, that's on Kalen DeBoer. That's on the coaching staff. That's on that organization. And so, look, they may have the 5th toughest schedule in the country, but I don't trust their head coach. I don't trust their team. I don't trust their execution. And until they prove that to me, game in and game out, that 5th toughest schedule may as well be the toughest schedule, because I just don't trust them to win big games consistently and string them together. And, on the road, they've won some games. At home, they've won some games. But also, they've lost games, too. I just don't know what to make of them. I've got to figure out what their offensive identity is going to be. And so, no, I have zero trust in what Alabama wants to do this upcoming season.
Rounding out 6 through 10, Mississippi State with the 6th toughest schedule in the country, although they do not play Georgia or Alabama, which goes to show just how tough that schedule can be. Your Kentucky Wildcats, who you're very high on, listed as the 7th ranked, Missouri at 8th, Tennessee at 9th, and Georgia at 10th. You're with us for another segment, partner, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm here for sure.
Okay, I was going to say, maybe we lost him just ironically as time for going to break, and Brandon just cut you from the phone lines. I mean, my goodness, when he's not here.
No, I'm here.
You should see how he acts when you're not here. I mean, my goodness, like a puppy chasing his tail, looking for work to do. We'll take a break. We'll come back, talk about where Auburn is in terms of the SEC football strength of schedule, also some news in terms of transfer portal and a recruit in there as well, as we're just off and running here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. Christmas night, 1776. The American Revolution was nearly lost. General George Washington and his ragged Continental Army faced freezing winds along the Delaware River. Many soldiers had no boots. Morale was collapsing. But Washington had one bold idea. Cross the river. Surprise the Hessian troops in Trenton. In darkness and snow, the army pushed boats through ice. By morning, they attacked. The victory was small in numbers, but enormous in spirit. The revolution lived to fight another day. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. The American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
Back here in the ESPN 106.7 studio, talking SEC football strength of schedule rankings, and we get back to the phone lines. And man, just a what a way to promote the unsponsored phone lines. Mr. Jacob Goins joining us from Hole 9 at RTJ Lakes, talking about all of these spring schedule rankings. We went through 1 through 5. We quickly talked about 6 through 10. And partner, there's a little bit of room to continue scrolling before we hit the Auburn Tigers, who, according to College Football News, are listed as the 15th toughest, so reverse that, to the second easiest SEC schedule in terms of just strength of schedule. You have at Georgia, at Alabama, which obviously are the ones that they highlight, but they talk about having a whole slew of winnable games to get the Alex Golish era off to a good start.
I mean, it's refreshing, if nothing else, right? That's what that's kind of the word that we've used in terms of
everything.
Goldfish in terms of the coaching and the roster and the vibes and the mentality. And now that we are, you know, truly getting into the off season, it's like, okay, let's talk about this schedule. Let's talk about the wins. Let's talk about the losses. Let's talk about the potential. And it's like, oh my God, it's actually doable for the Auburn Tigers on the football field. It's not just this gauntlet of, hey, let's go to Baton Rouge, let's go to Oxford, let's host Texas A&M while we go to Georgia and Alabama, and also, oh, you know, just take this fun trip to Clemson, South Carolina for the heck of it. It's really not all that terrible. And, you know, you get the home game to start. I mean, inside of Mercedes-Benz against Baylor to start. And then you have a couple more of your cupcake non-conference games. And then a couple of big ones inside of Jordan-Hare to start SEC play. Florida is mixed in there. LSU is mixed in there. You do have, some okay games against the Mississippi schools and things like that. You mentioned having to go, unfortunately, to Athens and to Alabama, but they are spread out and kind of mixed in the whole schedule to where it's not as big of a deal. Mm-hmm. And, I think that just shows more so, in my opinion, Christian, how tough Auburn's schedules have been versus what this schedule actually is. Because most people would look at this schedule and say, all right, that's not the easiest thing in the world. Neutral site against Baylor, hosting a couple tough games, and you got to go to Athens, you got to go to Tuscaloosa. But for Auburn fans, it's like, hallelujah, man, we'll take it. We have an easy schedule compared to what we've had in years past.
Yeah, collegefootballnews.com, which is, again, the article that we are referring all of this off of, their math, their post-spring calculation. calculations and then doing that based off of home games, based off of road games, and calculating the strength of schedule, ranking Auburn as the second easiest in terms of the SEC. That being said, I do think a lot of this is weighed down just because of how poorly they have Southern Miss and Samford rated, and so by no means are we sitting here saying that Auburn has an easy schedule, but even if you went and looked at it and you looked at just the SEC slate, if Auburn was middle of the pack, you still feel like that is a big-time win in terms of what the strength of schedule usually is and in terms of what Alex Golish and this staff is trying to accomplish in year one.
Well, I think, too, with a lot of those games at the beginning being stacked at home, right? I mean, yes, the Baylor game being a neutral site, technically. I know Auburn's trying to sell it as a home game, even though it's not. But you have a couple of big games inside of Jordan-Hare before you have to go on the road. I think you and I have described last year's schedule as win, survive, and win. This yeah. year's schedule seems to be a whole lot different to where it's like, okay, win, survive, and then win again? Question mark, right? I mean, it's stacked up a little bit different than it was a year ago, but at least you have the opportunity to stack a couple of wins at the top. And look, as we say in every college football season, but this one in particular for Auburn, it's like, man, if you get off to a halfway decent start, you have set yourself up for major success. And nobody's expecting Auburn to go to Athens and win. Nobody's really expecting Auburn to go to Tuscaloosa and win. And it's more so of, hey, can you protect home field like you have not done in the past 5 or 6 years? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I would love for Auburn to beat Florida, in that game. I would love Auburn to beat LSU. I would love Auburn to handle business against the bottom half of the SEC, which I hate that we're having to beg and plead for that, but it hasn't been a given in a decade almost, right? And so at least the last 5 or 6 years, if nothing else. And so you set yourself up in a big way if you're able to get those wins off the rip. And then after that, you just see what happens.
Baylor, Southern Miss, Florida, and Vanderbilt get the season started for the Auburn Tigers. And Jacob Goins said it first. Auburn has an opportunity for great success. That's what I'm hearing from Mr. Goins. Jacob, we appreciate your time. I know you're looking forward to getting back into the studio here with us tomorrow afternoon, but appreciate you for hopping on and taking some time with us. And if you get another celebrity shot, man, try and find the fairway.
Yeah, enjoy talking a little baseball. A couple of the great interviews coming up. I'll be back in studio tomorrow, but a lot of great content coming up over the next 90 minutes.
Yep, appreciate you, sir. Jacob Goins, our co-host, sitting with us, usually in the studio, joining us on the phone lines to get the afternoon started. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and as he mentioned, man, that deep dive of Auburn baseball as they win the series yet again. This time they do it in College Station. We'll tell you all about it when we return.
Into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We appreciate Jacob for joining us again on the phone lines, getting the afternoon started. No, he wanted to be in here to talk a lot about what we're talking about here coming up, but just to be able to have a little bit of time to talk a little bit of Auburn football. I know as he's held up with some stuff that he thought was going to just take the morning, but realized it was going to take the afternoon in there as well. But, man, we're still off and rock and rolling. We're still off and going here, and we're having a good time doing so. And we now move to the Auburn baseball side of things. And, my goodness, is there a better thing in all of Auburn sports right now to be able to talk about? Auburn 32-14 overall. They're now 14-10 in conference play, and more importantly in that as well, they're now 7-6 on the road, which is something that you don't necessarily look a whole lot at, but the more that these numbers continue to come out, we talked a lot about them yesterday. We know the RPI and the strength of schedule is very, very much in favor of the Auburn Tigers, but now you're looking at non-conference strength of schedule, non-conference RPI, and you're beginning to mix some of these extra numbers, which go to show you why Auburn, according to a lot of postseason brackets, have Auburn anywhere from the 4th overall national seed to the 7th overall national seed. And the win over Texas A&M in the series, I would say, has boosted a little bit of that as well. The phone lines are open if you would like to be a part of this conversation at 334-321-1390. Two scheduled guests coming up in the second hour. And so if you have thoughts on baseball, on what we just talked about in terms of football, or anything else that's on your mind, now is the time to do so. Again, 2:30 till about 3 is when those phone lines are open here on the show. But talking about Auburn and Texas A&M, the series that was won by the Tigers in two games, the doubleheader, which we talked a little bit about possibly favoring this Auburn team. The times already favor a little bit of the road teams when you get some of those earlier Friday afternoons or early Saturday afternoons, just based off of the early performance. And again, thankfully, with the bananas over at Kyle Fields, it made it to where, okay, well, in game two, there were some extracurriculars that made it to where fans left a little bit early. And shout out to the Auburn admin as well. We talked about this sitting on the couch, myself, Jacob, and our good buddy Jack Hudden. We're all sitting there watching game two. And it was, man, if Auburn can sweep this doubleheader, if they can win the series, I need their caption or I need something to be in terms or in line with the bananas. And they did just that. They used the song over the highlights, and it was absolutely incredible. So a major shout out to the Auburn admin on that side of things, the social media, the graphics team. All did an incredible job. They also did Choosing Texas, so I know that Jacob was more happy about that than anything else that he's ever seen in his entire life. It was a video of Auburn baseball hitting home runs with Ella Langley music behind it. Nothing better for Jacob Goins on that side of things. But let's dive into these three games and not necessarily talk about the scores, because we know, again, Auburn run-ruled A&M in game one. They won the nail-biter in game two when they lost the nail-biter in game three. But more so some of the storylines, and we have some comments and some quotes as well from some of the players over from our friends at the Auburn Sports Network with the Regions Bank postgame show. But wanted to dive into some of the storylines that were kind of underlying from this game. And you start in game one. Again, Bluebell Park is a very, very hitter-friendly ballpark. Everybody knows that. It goes to show you why some of the best teams in the SEC, you look at their park and, okay, well, their home run numbers, yes, because they're so good offensively, but B, the park is just what it is, and it more than likely is going to show the numbers on that side of things and help them out. Texas A&M is a very, very good example of that. Georgia is as well at Foley Field. Both of those places, as you saw, are just jet streams, especially down the lines. You saw the netting in left field. You saw the bullpen in right field with the train in right center. The ball carried to those two sides. Not as much to straightaway center field, but a lot of the power numbers that you see, especially in college, don't come hitting the ball right back where it came from, unless you're trying to just go from gap to gap. But my goodness, Auburn strikes for six in the top half of the second inning, and the age-old discussion, Brent, I'm actually going to bring you in for this, because I know you're not the biggest baseball guy, but you know, you watch enough of it to understand it. We had a conversation about this actually on the Lee Scott Sports Network as well, and the announcers, I know Auburn fans made great friends with the announcers on SEC Network from the Aggie radio broadcast on the doubleheader on Saturday, but they had the conversation, the debate on batting around. All right, are you somebody that a team bats around? So if, say it just starts with the leadoff hitter. Are you somebody that says they bat around when the nine-hole hitter gets up, or are you somebody that says they bat around once the leadoff hitter comes back up for his second at-bat?
I would say when the leadoff batter comes up for the second at-bat.
Gosh, I'm so happy you said that. Myself, Caleb Robertson, again on the Lee Scott Sports Network, say the exact same thing. I hate it when people say you batted around and it just went 1-9. No, that's batting through the lineup. Batting around means the same player getting another at-bat in the same inning. Auburn was able to do that in that second inning. I'm so glad you're on that side of things as well. I was halfway hoping you'd say otherwise and I could just ridicule you on the air. But no, glad to know that you agree on that side of things. Do what?
My stance.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, always ready. Yes, always ready here for you. But no, but Auburn scores six in the top half of the second inning. A&M responds with a two-run shot of their own to, you feel like, cut into a little bit of the momentum. And even while watching this game, it was, okay, you're going back to the top half of the third inning, yet why does it feel like A&M has a little bit of that momentum? and Auburn squandered that immediately by putting up another run in the top half of the third. Yes, A&M responded with one of their own in the home half, but just goes to show you, gosh, I talk so much about it in terms of high school baseball, college baseball, the pros, whatever the case may be. The response innings and the shutdown innings, they're so important, and it's what you have to do. And credit A&M in the second and in the third of, okay, you give up a sixth spot to the Auburn team in the top half of the second, go back and at least get one. Well, they got two. Okay, Auburn scored one in the third to make it 7-2. Okay, find a way, go and get one, and they did. Made it 7-3 once you hit the conclusion of the first three innings. Then Auburn continued to open it up, and Andreas Alvarez continued to get more and more comfortable. Auburn with a four spot in the fourth, a four spot in the fifth, and my goodness, that was what broke it open. You look at this Auburn lineup, every single starter had a hit. The only one that didn't was Mason McCrane, and that was because he got hit and then came out of the game because of it. But Cade Ballou had an absolutely incredible performance, and that's where I want to start talking about this team. Of there are 12 or 13 guys that legitimately have the opportunity and the possibility of being in the lineup at any given time. And the fact of there are such selfless, not selfish, selfless guys in that Butch Thompson squad and that Butch Thompson lineup to where he can go to any one of them at any given time and feel comfortable. Cade did not get the start in game one, yet was called upon and delivered. Went 3-for-3, had two RBIs, had a run in there as well. Had one of those RBIs in the second where he was able to leg out an infield hit, and you feel like that was what just continued the rally and started it even more in that second inning. But 3-for-3 for Cade Ballou, a guy that did not get the start and was just ready when his name was called upon. And so much credit goes to him on that side of things. Eric Guevara, my goodness, we'll talk about him a little bit as well. I don't know if there's a guy who found more barrels, other than maybe Chase Frelick, but I don't know if there's a guy who found more barrels in the series that did not have that reciprocate in the hit column. He went 1-for-5, did have two RBIs, and scored a run as well, but the A&M guys even talked about it. It was, I think it was halfway through game two. They talked about Eric Guevara being 1-for-7 in the series and how they felt like that was a relief, yet the entire Auburn team responded around him. And it was like, yeah, he's 1-for-7, man has four lineouts as well, and it could have very easily been another SEC Player of the Week type of performance for Eric Guevara, but continued to play the hot corner and continues to better than just about everybody. Chase Frelick, couple of hits, couple of long balls as well. We'll get his thoughts here in just a moment from the clip we have from the Regions Bank postgame show. Rembert, 2-for-5. Bingaman goes 3-for-4, three RBIs, three runs scored as well. Bub Terrell, a hit, a couple of walks, a couple of runs scored. Brandon McCrane hits his first jack of the year. And Eddie Madrigal, Bristol Carter all continue that party for the Auburn Tigers. And Andreas Alvarez goes the entire distance. All seven innings, had six hits, five runs, four of them were earned. Did not walk a batter, and that is another very, very big thing in SEC play to not give up, especially in an offensive ballpark like that, to where you saw Auburn take advantage of that in the later halves in game three. Although they lost it, it was, okay, a couple of walks, a couple of errors, maybe a free extra 90 feet here and there, and man, all of a sudden you're a bloop and a blast away from tying this game, or all of a sudden you're a 4-3 or a fielder's choice instead of a 4-6-3 double play from tying it, going to extras, or even Auburn continuing the rally in the ninth inning. Free passes are something that this Auburn team has prided themselves on. We've talked all about it in terms of what Butch Thompson has talked about in 60-65% strike rate. Andreas Alvarez continues to do that, throwing 114 pitches in that outing, and we want his thoughts in there. This was Brad Law after the doubleheader being able to talk with Andreas Alvarez about his start, about the way that his offense helped him out, and the confidence that doubleheader sweep gave to the Auburn Tigers.
Now he's approaching 70 pitches.
He went.
Check swing, outside corner. Did he go? They appealed to third. He did go. Could not stop the swing. Perfectly placed on the outside corner, and Alvarez strikes out the side in the fourth. Talk to Andreas Alvarez. Okay, I saw you in the dugout after the first game. Let's walk this way a little bit. Saw you in the dugout after the first game, and you know, looked like that adrenaline was still running pretty hot. What is it now, after watching the second game and the way that it ended?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I could have gone out there and thrown for us again. I mean, all the
the soreness and tiredness went away when you get into a game like that. It just feels awesome to be in a, like, just feels great to be in a, have our team be in a spot like that and be able to compete like that. It's just awesome, especially at a place like this.
Plan of attack today, Coach just mentioned, offensive ballpark, day game in May, and against this power-hitting team, how'd you manage to hold them at bay today?
Yeah, I mean, credit to our offense because, I mean, they gave me 18 runs. And, I mean, that was just that just gave me the ability to go out there and just throw as many strikes as possible. And I gave up a few pretty good homers against that lineup. And they're one of the best offenses in the country. And just really it's just the offense was able to help me out and be able to just attack the zone.
Especially after the last two homers, though, you bounced back. I think you got 7 in a row, 6 in a row right after that. What do you credit your ability to just snap back in and not let one multiply after that?
Yeah, I just know it's part of the game. Those guys are going to hit those balls like that in a park like this with a lineup like that. Just got to, you can't get in your feelings about it. You just got to go back out there and just attack.
All right, tell me about going out for the seventh, because your 100th pitch is to end the sixth. Do you have any idea of your pitch count at that point? Do you know you're at 100? And what's the conversation like in the dugout?
Yeah, Petro actually was the reason I even knew my pitch count was high like that in the sixth. I mean, I got to 100 pitches in the sixth, and I felt good, and Teef came up to me and was like, how do you feel? And I was like, I feel amazing. He goes, all right, let's ride. So that was really it.
All right, what does it mean for this team now? Fifth straight series win to come on the road and do it. You know it's a tough stretch going down the stretch, but, I mean, you guys aren't blinking.
Yeah, I mean, to get two games like this in a row at Texas A&M, I mean, that's huge for us. And, I mean, this is a team that doesn't quit, and we just fight till the end no matter what. And, I mean, just it's going to give us the most confidence in the world these next two weekends to go out there against more good competition like these guys and just compete.
Certainly did today. It was a pleasure watching you. Thanks for the visit, War Eagle.
Thank you, War Eagle.
100 pitches after six innings, and he walks up to Coach Tiefert and asks how you're feeling. He says, I feel great. And Tiefert says, all right, let's ride. And that was about as far as that conversation went. It's about all you need to know about Andreas Alvarez, who got the start on Saturday, game one of the doubleheader. Auburn wins it 18-5. And again, we appreciate all the audio from our partners over at the Auburn Sports Network, Brad Law and Andy Burcham, doing that Brad Law you heard talking about. If you'll hear him here in just a moment as well, because in game two of the doubleheader, Auburn wins it 5-4. And by the law of averages, you would imagine that things wouldn't be as high scoring. Coach Butch Thompson would have said otherwise, just because of the day game setting up for the ball to fly and end up being a very high-scoring series. But Chase Frelick continues to do what he does. He homered in five straight games, the first to do so since 1985. This was Brad Law meeting with Chase Frelick after the game following his multi-homer game.
Here's the wind in the 1-1. Frelick drives one into left. Dewar is back at the warning track. He looks up. It's gone! Chase Frelick goes opposite field for his second home run in as many bats, his third home run of the doubleheader, and the Tigers lead 3-0. Buddy, is he on a heater?
Talk it over now with Chase Frelick. All right, whatever you had for breakfast today, you probably ought to do it again tomorrow. What a day, Chase. Three homers, you catch masterfully both games of a doubleheader. Talk about the importance of just this day to come and get these first two wins.
I mean, this day was incredible. I mean, we were fully rested. We haven't played since Sunday. And, I mean, 6 days off is huge, especially at this point in the season. And we took it in stride, and we wanted to come out here and show what this team's capable of.
And it showed. You guys were locked in early. Tell me about the importance of that second inning in game one today and being able to get to their starter early and put such a big number on the board early.
It was awesome. I mean, especially with the doubleheader, guys aren't really going to bounce back for the next day. And getting their starter out, getting into their pen early is really important. But it was also just passing the bat back. I mean, we didn't have a big swing until, I think, the third or the fourth. All those were just singles and doubles, passing the bat back in the lineup. And everybody in this lineup did a great job contributing to today.
All right. What do you remember about your home run in game one today?
I got the pitch I was looking for, and I was very happy I got it in the spot that I did.
Yeah. All right. And then you start the second game with the home run to right. The first Auburn player to homer in five straight games since 1985. And you do it both. You pull one, and then the next at-bat you go opposite direction. That things have to be locked in pretty well to do that in two straight at-bats.
Agreed. I mean, it's all, it's everything Gabe preaches, which is being on time for the heater and let the breaking ball speed your bat up. And that was an example of it where, I mean, I got a breaking ball down and put a good swing on it, and then I got a plus count fastball and stayed on it and hit it out the other way.
Let's shift from offense now to catching and calling the game as they get a little tighter. They make it a one-run game. The job that Jake and Jackson did and you working with them down the stretch to limit what A&M was able to do.
It's just the conviction they have in themselves. I mean, they're so confident in what they can do, and their plans are very, very distinct of what they're trying to do, and that's what we preach in practice. The plan that you have, you go out there and execute, win, lose, or draw, and their plan was better than the plan that they had, and that's why we came out with the result that we did.
How important was this day for this team to get these two wins and set the tone with so many on the road down the stretch?
I mean, it shows that we can go anywhere and we can play good baseball. I mean, this place is unlike anything I've ever seen before, and we took it in stride and took the energy right out of the stadium in game one, and we had some other events that made this stadium not so full in game two, but we took them out of it as well.
Appreciate this visit, Chase. Get some rest. We'll see you tomorrow. War Eagle.
War Eagle.
Some extracurricular events that took them out of game two. I don't think it necessarily mattered. I think the left-handed bat of Chase Frelick took Texas A&M out of the game, both in game one and game two. Again, that was over on the Regions Bank postgame show, Brad Law being able to talk with Andreas Alvarez and Chase Frelick after the doubleheader sweep over Texas A&M. Auburn winning their fifth straight SEC series, and that puts them in a very unique spot. We'll talk a little bit about that in hour number two, but let's look outside of Auburn and A&M and some of the biggest series of this past weekend. There were some sweeps, there were some good 2-1 series, but not too many upsets. Auburn may have been the only upset of the week. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the standings as we wrap up hour number one right after this here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Just went through our Auburn baseball deep dive, more so on the doubleheader, but talking about, man, some of the things that really stood out to us and to me and walking, or the lack thereof, on the mound, especially in game one of Andreas Alvarez, and then Jake Marciano, Jackson Standers, and honestly, Alex Petrovic doing a fantastic job in there as well. But while we wrap up and while we have just a moment, did want to look around the SEC series results, and we know that Auburn took 2 of 3 in College Station, and you feel like, man, that may have been the only true upset of the weekend. There might be another one in here as we dive through it, but Alabama sweeps Vanderbilt, a much-needed series win and a sweep for Alabama, which puts them right back into the legitimate conversation of not only being a host site of a regional, but also a super regional as well. LSU sweeps South Carolina. Georgia sweeps Missouri. Arkansas wins the series against Ole Miss. Texas wins the rubber match and beats Mississippi State. That's a matchup that you'll definitely want to keep your eyes on. Florida upsets. I don't think it's an upset, but they do win the series on the road in Norman at Oklahoma. And the one major upset I feel like you could even put in an argument is Kentucky wins the series against Tennessee. Neither one of those teams really feels like they're in a spot to make a whole lot of noise. And they're at the point of, yeah, we'll figure it out when we figure it out. But, again, those are the SEC series results from this past weekend. In hour number two, we'll talk a little bit about the SEC standings right now, what the SEC tournament looks like in there as well. But we continue a tradition unlike any other. We get to sit down with another member of Auburn baseball, and it's the closer, the man you call on when you need three outs. Ryan Hetzler joins me on the phone lines to start hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway in hour number two here on the line. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. No Jacob Goins here with us in the studio, but I'm Christian Griffin taking you the rest of the way here throughout the program this afternoon. And, man, we appreciate everybody for being here with us, whether it's on ESPN 106.7, whether it's ESPNAU.com or that Radio Alabama app. In hour number one, Jacob did join us on the phone lines, and we talked, man, some of the toughest schedules in the SEC and the strength of schedule in there as well. And the College Football News released it that Auburn was the second easiest, according to their mathematicians and their math calculations and a whole lot of numbers that we didn't look at. We just looked at where Auburn was placed, and we saw that they were number 15 by their name. And so that was what that's our level of math here on the program. But we also looked at the top five and talked about whether or not we agreed with those rankings, and man, just some of the games that we may have forgotten about that some of these teams play that should be a whole lot of fun, man. Saturdays in the fall are almost here. Part of me feels like I'm happy that it's not here yet, and it can take its time. The other half of me is like, man, I'm ready to get it here so that way we can have something major, major to look forward to on Saturday afternoons. I mean, we have Auburn baseball, but, I mean, Jacob, not a baseball fan. You're not a baseball fan. Just playing. You are, definitely. We also had our deep dive into Auburn baseball, man. We talked about the series win over Texas A&M over in College Station. We talked about game one, it being the offense and Andreas Alvarez, and even more so the ability to not give up free passes on the mound. There was a couple in game two with Sanders and Marciano both walking a couple, but being able to avoid the major dangers and walk out of danger a couple of times. But it'd be Chase Frelick that, man, just continues to swing one of the hottest bats in all of college baseball right now. Had a couple audio clips in there from Andreas Alvarez as well as Chase Frelick from our friends over at the Auburn Sports Network in the Regions Bank postgame show, and got to pick their brain and hear their thoughts on what their mindset was after the doubleheader win in College Station, Auburn winning their fifth straight SEC series. We also just recapped some of the other series going on in the SEC, some of the big-time sweeps, and how Auburn, you could say, was the only major upset of the weekend in terms of the national media, in terms of those that make their overall picks. Not many people picked Auburn to win the series, much less even take a game over in College Station. And so the Auburn Tigers continuing to impress. And here in hour number two, we'll talk about some of the SEC standings right now. We'll also talk about what the SEC tournament would look like if it got started in Hoover here this afternoon. Where does Auburn sit in terms of that? And the logjam that's in the middle of how Auburn needs to continue handling business, because right now they could go anywhere from the number two seed to the number nine seed. And you feel like it wouldn't be that crazy of a jump or a drop. And so we'll talk about that. We also have a special guest joining us at 3:30. We'll tell you a little bit more about that in just a little bit. But here, starting hour number two, we continue a tradition, man, that brings us a whole lot of happiness. We absolutely love doing it. We get to talk with a member of Auburn baseball, whether it's Coach Butch Thompson, whether it's one of the assistants, or whether it's one of the players. And this morning, I was able to talk with the closer, the man who walks out to Suavemente, who loves firing up the crowd with the lively fastball, the wipeout slider. Here is my conversation with Auburn baseball's closer, Ryan Hetzler. We welcome you back into the Tuesday edition of On the Line right here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader on ESPNAU.com and that Radio Alabama app. Christian Griffin here with you, and now we continue a tradition, man, that we have so much joy in every single week. Auburn baseball isn't just winning. They're continuing to stack series. They're finding ways late, and when the game gets to the final three outs, man, they've got a guy that they trust to shut the door. And joining us now, one of those key pieces, Auburn's closing pitcher, Ryan Hetzler. Ryan, my man, we appreciate your time and hope all is well before you're getting on the bus here in just a little bit.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, Ryan, five straight SEC series wins. You're setting the record now in Southeastern Conference play, and you're coming off a big one in College Station. What does that say about this team right now and the way that you guys are playing, not only on the field, but in a confidence standpoint as well?
It's huge. I mean, both sides of the ball are doing their jobs. I think a big thing of that is the standard we hold ourselves to, not only as players, but as people too. But being able to contribute on both sides of the ball, hitters are doing their thing without a doubt. Pitchers are holding the line. And it's very hard to beat us if we can do both of those in one game.
It feels like the group just expects to be in the game late if it needs to get to that point. Obviously, game one in College Station makes things a little bit easier. But how much confidence is there in that dugout when you're in a tight one, whether it's the offense needs a run or the defense, the pitching staff needs to put up a zero? How much faith is there in that entire dugout right now?
It's huge. I mean, that's all we practiced in the fall was the ninth inning. I think we're the most prepared team when it comes to the ninth inning in the country. And I think we have the most confidence knowing that either side of the ball can get the job done.
Take me into your world. Again, as we have Ryan Hetzler here with us of Auburn baseball. Last season, working your way into this season, what was some of the biggest focus points or the biggest things of interest that you wanted to set your mind to, whether that was on the field, whether that was off the field, that ultimately allowed you to already have so much success this season?
It was two main things. One, on the field was kind of gaining some more velocity. I know last season I trended down near the end of the season, so the big thing was holding the velocity throughout the season.
Sure.
And the off-the-season thing is just giving my season to Christ, just knowing that he has a plan for my life and knowing that it's in his hands.
I love it, man. Well, when you're in the dugouts, or when you're over in the bullpen and that phone rings and you know that it is your inning, is it a little bit of calm? Is it a little bit of adrenaline? Is it somewhere in between? Take us into the mind of a closing pitcher, because there's not many people that truly get that experience of knowing, hey, it's your responsibility to go out there and get three outs. If it's at home, you have your music bumping. If it's somebody else's place, man, you have the entire crowd breathing down your neck. Talk us through those moments of you warming up and then running out onto the field.
Okay, I think it's a little bit of both calm and adrenaline. I kind of pride myself on being an adrenaline junkie. So being in opposing ballparks, honestly, a lot better for me.
Sure.
I like having the crowd kind of get after me a little bit. Helps me out. But I also pride myself on being calm and collected on the mound. I don't like showing too much emotion. Kind of grown up with coaches telling me don't show emotion. So, but I think just being calm and collected on the mound is the best part of my game.
Well, Ryan, you've got a 4-1 record this year, and that's not something that you traditionally see from the closer spot, but it really highlights how this staff, again, we talked about it, whether that's keeping you in games or needing to put up zeros. What's made this pitching group work so well together throughout the year?
It's just the amount of strikes we throw in the zone, the commitment to throwing strikes, getting outs however they come. Doesn't matter if it was a hard line out, a strikeout, no matter what, we're committed to the zone and letting the hitters try to beat us.
Auburn's closing pitcher Ryan Hetzler here with us on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. And when things don't go perfectly, again, on that same forefront, maybe a guy reaches or maybe the tying run gets on, how do you slow everything down? You mentioned being the adrenaline junkie, and when you run out onto the field, you have the blood pressure, you have the adrenaline rolling, but you then get the ball, you step on the rubber. How are you able to slow everything down?
It's honestly just thinking about the next pitch. You got to let the last pitch go. You can control one pitch at a time. And unfortunately, you can only control all the way up until release point. It's up to the defense and the hitter after that. Just giving the control to your defense, the eight guys behind you, just knowing that they can do their job for you.
And how much confidence, man, does this Auburn defense give you? We could talk about the series in Gainesville with EG making a heck of a play, turning the double play, or just, man, throughout the season. How much easier is it knowing that you work your way onto the mound and all you have to do is deliver strikes because you know, as you mentioned, those guys are going to work behind you and they continue to put incredible highlight reels on the tape?
It takes the stress completely off of our pitching staff when our defense can do what they do. It makes it easy for us to just fill up the zone and just know the guys behind you are going to help you out in any way possible.
Ryan Hetzler of Auburn Baseball here with us on the phone lines. And wanted to dive into the personal, or I guess the pre-college lifestyle a little bit, because not everybody, and it's obviously not very popular, I guess growing more popular, the PO, pitcher-only side of things, and then the closer side of things as well. Talk us through your travel ball days, your high school days, of how that's worked out. Did you hit at all in middle school, high school, or when did you know that you were going to be one of those pitchers, and then when did you kind of work your way into that closing role?
All the way up until probably sophomore year of high school, I prided myself on my defense and hitting.
Okay.
I was a switch hitting shortstop, but ever since my junior year of high school, I really committed to being a pitcher only. I had more fun in it, just knowing that I had the complete control over the ball.
That just means, I mean, you're a follower of pitchers or athletes too, right?
Oh, 100%.
The Jacob DeGrom of college baseball, Ryan Hetzler here with us, started as the shortstop. And, hey, if we ever need somebody to go out there, could you give us an AB if it's needed?
I can definitely try. I can't promise anything.
Well, Ryan, when you need one pitch, one out, one moment, I have a feeling I know the answer. But for everybody listening that may not know your style of play as much, man, what is the pitch that you trust the most in any given situation?
It's whatever pitch I feel the most comfortable with in throwing a strike, honestly. It can change day to day, but some days it's fastball, some days it's the slider.
That's a really interesting answer, a really good answer as well. And dive into that for me, if you will. I mean, I played at the high level, but, I mean, I did not pitch. And so people just understand the, man, just throw strikes. It's not that difficult to do. But not only are you trying to throw strikes, you're trying to locate against some of the best bats in all of college baseball. And you're doing that sometimes with an A-plus fastball. You're sometimes doing that with an A-plus slider. And somewhere in between, talk us through the focal mentality and what you're having to do to bear down to get those strikes and still to locate, man, when things may not be at your very best.
Yeah, I mean, Butch absolutely hammers. It's not what you throw, it's where you throw it. And some days you might not have a certain pitch. It could be your A-plus pitch the day before, but for that given day, you might not have it. So you got to figure something else out on the fly. And you just got to trust that whatever pitch you're feeling that day, that you can command it to where you need to get it.
This team, man, continues to show so much fight. What have you learned about this group being one of kind of those leaders, not only in the bullpen, but just of this team when going through the SEC grind week after week?
This team just doesn't quit. I mean, whether we're down or up, no matter what, we're going to give our best effort. The standard stays the same throughout every single inning. We're absolutely going to try to win every single inning. And if we can keep winning every single inning, that's going to pile on to winning games.
We've talked with Coach Butch Thompson multiple times and got to talk with him at a luncheon a couple of weeks ago before the Texas series, actually. And he said that he wished that this team had felt a little bit more adversity before the heart of SEC play, just to see how the team was going to respond, to see how they were going to be able to bounce back. And unfortunately, it didn't really come until SEC play got started. We talked about the Texas series, kind of Alabama in there as well, and a couple of the midweeks. But talk about the conversations that happened, whether that was in the dugout, whether that was in the bullpen, about, man, we're going to turn this thing around, and we've seen the response of it, winning five straight SEC series.
It was really just holding ourselves to the standard that we know we can be at, and just being present in every pitch and every moment, not letting a single moment go, really just staying in the game and being present in your at-bats, in your pitches, on defense. Just being able to really be in the moment and just sucking it all up.
Was there a moment for you this season when it was like, okay, yes, this is the role that I'm in. This is where I belong. And this is where I'm in. I'm just going to come out and deliver strikes. And, man, this is the time that I feel my best.
I believe Youngstown State, I think, sure. The very first out of the year kind of dictated it for me, kind of what my role was going to be. And it's just going to be the big moment, whenever that could be. It could be early in a game, late in a game. The biggest moment of the game that I'm ready for.
And we talk all about walk-up songs, and we talk all about just music. I guess before I dive into this, when you know that there's a possibility of a Friday night or even the Saturday, the game two, what's blaring through your ears, knowing that you could be the guy that gets the mound in a big-time situation? And how different is that than a starter, where you have all day to prepare for your start? You have all day to go through the motions. Man, you don't know if you're going to get ready until the seventh inning at some games. So how do you keep your mind locked in, and maybe what's the music that you're playing throughout the afternoon?
Luckily, fortunate enough, I'm able to know kind of my role and my scenario.
Sure.
So I can kind of plan it out during a game. I can see it starting to happen, so I can get myself mentally ready. As for music, I like being kind of calm and collected. I listen to some slower music, honestly, some Billie Eilish a little bit. But yeah, fortunate enough, I'm able to kind of see my role pan out and kind of watch the game and be ready for that.
It's so funny that everybody we've talked to has talked about the Billie Eilish, the Olivia Dean, and, man, making it to where it's just a really fun vibe, a really fun atmosphere, whether that's before the game, whether that's during the game. And Ryan Hetzler coming out to close the game. And when he does, man, Suavemente is blaring through. It's been a little bit since we've heard it, it feels like, man, just because of the road trip, and you still have a couple more. I believe there was 8 straight road games that this Auburn Tigers team is going to play before coming back to take on Georgia. How much of a conversation goes into the closing song, right? You hear all about, and you've seen so many of the videos, whether that's Craig Kimbrell, whether that's Aroldis Chapman, whether that's so many of these guys in the major leagues that pride themselves on that music, on that moment. When did Suavemente work its way for you, and how much pride do you take in that song?
It really fit in last year. I was kind of just looking more so for, honestly, a Spanish song, but also a song that can kind of get the crowd maybe moving a little bit.
Sure.
Because more so, the song's not for the pitcher, it's for the crowd and getting the crowd invested into the game.
I mean, I would say that it works out. I mean, the amount of people that stand up and give their little dance, I mean, I think it fires everybody up. Are there conversations on the team about who has the best? Are you thrown in that conversation?
I've heard myself in that conversation, but I've also heard others. I know Griffin Graves has a good walkout song that I like.
Which one is Griffin's?
I forgot the exact name.
I was going to say, I put you on the spot for
the show.
Okay. I do think I know which one you're talking. Are you an MLB The Show player as well?
I tend to play it a little bit, yeah.
We talked with Andres Alvarez, and we got his thoughts on whether he's Road to the Show, whether he's Diamond Dynasty, and whether he likes using his own pitch mix or whatever he likes to do. Are you in that boat as well? Are you an MLB, or are you a Road to the Show type of guy? Do you create yourself your own pitch mix, or is it more of like, okay, I'm going to go play Diamond Dynasty, I'm going to carve people up online?
I play a little bit of both. Road to the Show, I create a hitter because I just want to absolutely mash.
Do something that you don't do anymore.
Yeah, and then Diamond Dynasty, team's not too well right now, so I try to have fun with it, though.
That's what we just get in the offseason. Once we get into the summer, everything will be okay. It's a good excuse not to have your team fully built up right now.
Yeah.
Ryan Hetzler here with us, the Auburn closer, here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Man, as always, we appreciate everybody's time of Auburn baseball. We appreciate your time. I know today's a busy day. You said getting on the bus here, heading to Birmingham in just a couple of hours. Man, we wish you nothing but the best here for the rest of the season. We appreciate your time here joining us on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
We'll step aside, come back on the other side here. More from the Tuesday edition of On the Line right after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
Continuing on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, we appreciate Ryan Hetzler of Auburn Baseball joining us, Mr. Suavemente. Ooh, that was good right there. I'm telling you, there's nothing like, man, hearing that's like something out of your nightmares. You're looking down the right field line, you're looking at the mound, all of a sudden the lights cut off, and that's what you hear out of the back corner, and you just see a little light. There's just a man, you're sleep paralysis demon just standing there, and it's Ryan Hetzler running onto the mound. We appreciate him for joining us and for able to give some insights on not only his game, his life on the mound, but then outside of that as well, talking about the adrenaline junkie, but also listening to Billie Eilish. I don't know how much those things go hand in hand, but maybe sometimes you got to have a counterbalance, and that's what you need to be a closing pitcher, man. It's not a life that's built for too many people. There's so many times where, I mean, this is one of the most stressful jobs, because you know that, all right, well, when your name is called upon, you got to go and you got to get out, and you got to get out immediately. And most of the time, they're in a one-run game. And so we appreciate him and his time. Auburn baseball making their way down now. I believe he said they got on the bus at 1 o'clock to head to Birmingham to take on UAB here coming up tonight. But while we have a few moments, wanted to dive into the SEC standings right now and what the SEC tournament would look like if all things were to come to a close right now. And you could say, thankfully, it's not, or maybe in a couple of weeks, a lot of these teams are going to say, man, I wish that it did end a couple of weeks ago because we were in a really good spot. Auburn is the number 4 seed in the SEC right now, which means they get to double bye, which means they wouldn't play until Friday, which would be a really, really big deal, because that then sets you up to keep a normal rotation, right? That keeps it to where your Friday guy can still go. If that's Alvarez, which you would imagine it would be, he still gets to start on Friday. You win that, it would be Marciano and probably Sanders on Saturday. And then if you get to the championship game, it would be Petro on Sunday. And then regardless of that, then you would get to the point of, okay, next Friday is the regional. And you get to the point where everything is on kind of that weekly routine. But Auburn right now would get a first round bye, which is very, very important, a big time thought, a big time talking point, a big time thought of hopefully some motivation moving forward over these next couple of weekends, because Auburn right now is set up to play Mississippi State again after this series. You would imagine some things would be flipped around, whether it's between these two schools or just because of the logjam anywhere in the SEC right now, because I don't think anybody catches Georgia for the regular season SEC championship, but Auburn could legitimately play its way into the 2 seed or legitimately into the 9 seed. And that's something that comes with pressure, yes. That's also something that comes with a whole lot of excitement, because we talked about it before the Texas A&M series of how awesome is it to know that you control your own destiny. You control what you want to do in the season. You use that term a lot more in football than you do in baseball, right? You have 3 more games to play. You control your own destiny. You win and you're in. Or you win and you need a little bit of help. But man, you get to the point in baseball when you have 2 regular season series. You have UAB tonight. You then have Jacksonville State, and the midweek following. That was a lot of words I was trying to think of at one time. You have UAB tonight, then you have Jacksonville State in the midweek to follow in between the 2 SEC series. And so Auburn can legitimately play their way into a 2 seed or all the way into a 9 seed, which goes to show you the pressure, but also the excitement. And also Field of 64 and D1 Baseball released their projections. And looking at it, this was 37 minutes ago as I'm looking at it on the unnamed cellular device, on the unnamed social media application right there. Auburn listed as the number 6th overall national seed, with the 2 seed Arizona State, the 3 seed UAB, and the 4 seed Maine. They would match up with the Gainesville Regional in Florida, with Wake Forest as the 2, TCU as the 3, and Bethune-Cookman as the 4. Still a lot of room to go, still a lot of time to hopefully make some jumps if you're the Auburn Tigers. But we flip over to the other diamond sports as Auburn softball gets a big-time win here earlier this morning. We have Britt Bowen joining us from the Auburn Sports Network to talk about the round 1 win, what needs to happen further on in Lexington, and maybe some Auburn women's basketball news in there as well. We've got 30 more minutes of On the Line right after this.
Halfway through hour number 2. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. No Jacob Goins, but Christian Griffin here with you in the studio, and we're having a great time, man. We're talking a lot of Auburn football. We just got done spending a whole lot of time talking about Auburn baseball. We appreciate Ryan Hetzler again, the closer for Auburn baseball, joining us on the phone lines, previewing, or I guess wrapping up the series against Texas A&M, talking about what's upcoming and just the overall excitement that this team is playing with right now. When we move from one diamond sports to the other, as Auburn softball gets a big-time win in round one of the SEC softball tournament. It was an early first pitch, but man, we're excited to bring this guy onto the phone line, somebody that's been very influential, and I know Jacob speaks on this as well, but in my life as well. Mr. Britt Bowen joining us on the phone lines. A pretty solid game one, I would say, or I guess I should say a pretty fantastic last couple of innings for the Auburn Tigers.
Hey guys, welcome on. Thanks for having me, I guess. War Eagle, yeah, it was a stellar final two innings, and it's what this team had been knocking on the door truly and been craving for, I'd say, the last month of play. And to see them come through in the clutch today, guys, when the season was on the line, truly, I mean, there really is no better feeling, and proud of every single one of those players, because after what happened last week, they had every excuse in the world to lay down, not show up. Yeah. And this team has done everything but that. So, you know, you live to see another day, and tomorrow they have the opportunity to go out and roll the dice and see what happens.
We'll talk about how it went down. Again, this Auburn team still looking on the outside in for what the regular or what the rest of the postseason looks like, but you mentioned it, a team yeah. that would have not been blamed whatsoever if they would have just crumbled and put this season down the drain. But a team that comes up with a lot of late fights, they were after down and outs, getting swept by Missouri in the regular season. Auburn wins it 6-2, four runs in the sixth, two more insurance runs in the seventh in round one. Talk about the stretch that happened over the sixth and the seventh inning and how the Tigers were able to get it done.
Well, one of the things that Auburn got runners on base, right, and really did a good job of putting pressure on Missouri's defense. And one thing underrated, I think, about Missouri is how good their defense is. They lead the conference in fielding percentage. They led the conference in errors, and what do you know? A throwing error is what scored the first run for Auburn, and you know, and then a wild pitch scores a run. So Auburn got their backs against the wall, and with that, a couple runners on base. You knew Haven Roebuck was due. She had struggled the last couple weeks. She hasn't homered since the Oklahoma series, which was mid March, and certainly didn't hurt that you had winds blowing out 15 miles per hour right to left of the ballpark.
Jeez.
And you know it whatever it takes sometimes, right? Haven got a good pitch, and Auburn got the momentum with a four-run sixth. And how about Kyla Stroud, though, coming back on yeah. to lead off the seventh, a pitch hit leadoff home run. Mania Womack, her bat stays hot after a two home run day and a three hit day in game three against LSU, has the big RBI single in the seventh inning. I mean, again, this team continued to piece things together, and they didn't have bad at bats all throughout the game. They just stayed with the plan. That was the big thing that Haven talked about in the post game, was staying to the plan that the coaching staff had for them. And, you know, you mentioned already seeing Missouri three times. That was a big factor in this. There were no secrets for either one of these teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, the scouting report, the book was out, right? And for Auburn, I mean, they came through and executed when it mattered.
How funny is it that the book was out, there were no secrets in round one, and there hasn't even been a book written in round two. Is Auburn going to face Texas A&M, the sixth seed, for the very first time this season, and Auburn still needing two yeah. more wins to become eligible for the postseason? But you mentioned it. You live to see another day. You get to roll the dice tomorrow morning. What have you heard or what have you seen about this Aggie team that Auburn's going to have to work against tomorrow morning?
One thing I've seen about Texas A&M is how good of an offensive team this team is. I mean, you look at their home run numbers. Maya Perez, she was an All-American a season ago. She's got 17 home runs. The Wart kid, she leads the way with 19 home runs. Whew. I mean, this is a team that can drive the softball. So Auburn's going to have their work cut out for them tomorrow. But the main thing is to come out and play free. I mean, while, yes, Auburn hasn't seen Texas A&M, and likewise, Texas A&M hasn't seen Auburn. Sure. I think that goes both ways, but they've got two top guns in the circle. I know Sydney Peters is one of them. She leads that staff with a 2.72 ERA. She's also really good at closing games. She's got four saves, and the Lacenti kid, and I probably pronounced that name wrong, her ERA is right there at 2.94, and she's 14-4, so one less loss than Peters had. So, again, they have a lot of depth. They have six arms. Excited to talk to Coach Malvo just about the pitching scout for this bunch, because while, yes, it is a little concerning, you haven't seen them, at the same time, I think it's to Auburn's advantage at this point in the season that they haven't seen us. So we'll come out and see what happens, but certainly got to feel like Auburn's going to come in tomorrow confident coming off the win here today.
Brett Bowen, voice of Auburn softball and basketball over in Lexington, Kentucky for the SEC softball tournament, and wanted to be able to shout out Alyssa Hastings as well, the junior shortstop who was named the SEC Community Service Team member. A really, really cool moment for her. I got to see some of the pictures, and again, in priority for her care with the Care Humane Society, with taking care of animal shelters, making sure that dogs get adopted, and the world rewarded her with a big-time triple, a run scored here this afternoon. Talk about the leadership that someone like that brings, not only as a captain of the defense, but a captain off the field as well.
Well, and she carries this team on her shoulders, and she leads by example. Like, every time we talk to her on the Regions Bank postgame show, she's always selfless. She's always team first, and that was certainly the case here today. That triple you're speaking of sparked the four-inning, six-inning rally for Auburn. And I go back to the moment against Kentucky, the 13-inning game, the first SEC series of the year. And I was waiting for her and Coach Malvo on the postgame show. And Coach Malvo, I watched him give her a hug and tell her, hey, you belong here. This is a kid that transferred from mid-major softball, was an outstanding conference player at Lipscomb, first-team all-conference selection. She was the best player on that team. And he told her that you belong. This moment was made for you. And ever since then, man, she's shown up each and every day. And this is a kid that grew up loving Auburn. And in this day and age, to have a kid like that on your roster, you just don't see that anymore. You don't see that kind of fandom, that kind of loyalty, and those kind of dreams being played out as frequent as you used to. So for an Auburn kid through and through to come through in the clutch like that, and to also be honored by the SEC is just special, and it's definitely an exciting week for her.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. An exciting week for her, an exciting week, hopefully, for the Auburn Tigers. Did want to expand outside of just Auburn softball and just look towards the SEC as a whole. What have you noticed throughout SEC play that you may not have seen throughout the past? And we know of the superb level of talent and the grind that the SEC gauntlet is, but is there something maybe between the lines or maybe something off the field that you've picked up on that may be a little bit different in the past of what you've seen?
From this year, this is one of the deepest like leagues I've ever seen out of all the years I've been in the SEC. I mean, I'm looking at the seedings of this tournament. I mean, you get teams that are hot. I mean, I legitimately think teams upwards of 8-9 teams have the actual talent to win this tournament and to have the depth to win this tournament. It's tough to make it out of the first day and then make the run all the way. I mean, because that's what, 5 games that you have to win. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's truly anybody's tournament. I mean, you look at the quality of arms, but also, too, the quality of hitting on these teams. And it just doesn't get any better than this. This is as close to the pros as you are going to get in SEC softball. So, again, it's a testament to what the sport has become. It's a testament to the teams that the SEC has brought in as well. It was already a great league before you got Texas and Oklahoma, and you add them in, and it's even better. So, if you want a preview of what Oklahoma City is going to look like in a couple of weeks, I would tune into the SEC tournament the next couple of days, because – you're going to see a handful of these teams in Oklahoma City. And I can tell you what, wouldn't surprise me if you saw a team or two that's playing tomorrow make a run to Oklahoma City, because you have the likes of Carlin Pickens playing tomorrow for Tennessee. I think Arkansas and Texas A&M are highly underrated. We just saw what LSU can do last weekend down in Baton Rouge. There are not many teams in the country wanting to play LSU with the way they're swinging the bats right now. So, I mean, for me, it's just the sheer depth, the sheer talent, and anybody can truly beat anybody, and that's what SEC softball is. And there's not many conferences in many sports that you can say that about. SEC softball, you can.
Brett Bowen, voice of Auburn softball, here with us on the phone lines, and we appreciate your time, and we'll get you to plug all the Auburn softball information here in just a moment, but also the voice of Auburn women's basketball, and my goodness, as Larry Vickers getting work done right now, a couple of big-time transfers along with signees, and most importantly, as they released a couple of days ago, a majority of the core coming back for the 2026-2027 season. Talk about the excitement that's being built right now by Larry Vickers and the staff for Auburn women's basketball.
I appreciate you mentioning that, because I appreciate what Coach Vickers is doing and how he's having to build truly from the ground up. In college basketball, there has never been a time in the history of the sport harder to do a rebuild in the world of NIL. And you know what he's doing, the challenge he's taking on, he's not shying away from it, and I just have so much respect for him and his staff with the way that they're recruiting and the way that they're approaching this. It's going to take time, and I can tell you some pieces that he got here in this recruiting class, getting Sierra from Ole Miss. I mean, this is a player that averaged over 10 points off the bench. Auburn got to see firsthand when they had to play Ole Miss in Birmingham this year in the regular season just how athletic she is. I mean, she automatically comes on the team. No disrespect to any player, but she is automatically the best player on the roster.
Wow.
She's that good. And then you talk about the pieces coming back with one of the top defenders in the SEC, Caitlin Duhon, and you throw in the likes of Jamia Harris. I mean, you have three really good players right there. And not to mention, you get Quinera Montague back in the post, in addition to Sydney Scott a couple years ago, who was on the team, transferred out to UCF. She is now back. Auburn's got some pieces now that they can work around and build around. And again, I don't know quite yet, you know, what this team is going to mean in terms of postseason, but I can tell you just on paper, Larry Vickers' squad is going to be much improved from what it was a year ago.
A man of many hats, even though it's prime softball season, still getting the women's basketball knowledge in there as well. Brett Bowen, the voice of both of those, Auburn softball and Auburn women's basketball, joining us on the phone lines. And my friend, plug everything that you have going on in terms of Auburn softball. Know they're taking on Texas A&M to get tomorrow morning started. What could that look like? Auburn still needs a little bit of help, but you mentioned it. The win over Missouri, a really, really good start for hopefully a start of a postseason run.
Yeah, for Auburn tomorrow, got to come out and take care of Texas A&M. Again, this is going to be one of the toughest tests that Auburn has had in the last month of play. But for Auburn today to come out with the way that they did, Auburn's got a big opportunity to carry that momentum and build on back-to-back wins. Because Coach Malvo, he told the team this morning, he said, don't let us get one. Well, they got one. Can they get another? We're going to find out tomorrow. It's another early start. It'll be 11 Eastern, 10 a.m. Central. I'll be on the call tomorrow with J.J. Jackson. Tune in. J.J. adds so much to our broadcast with his experience and his knowledge. We'll have the call again at 9:45 with a pregame show. We'll be on the air at Weagle 91.1 FM, online at auburntigers.com, and also the Auburn Athletics app. All of those platforms are free. And, of course, like my mom, she loves Facebook Live. we also have the Facebook Live stream as well. Again, they are all free. We would love for you to tune in and listen to us. We love Auburn softball, sometimes a little too much, but we love to have a good time and tell the story of the players and this team. And again, fingers crossed, hopefully we can get one more for you tomorrow.
9:45 start. Is that a coffee sitting to your right? Is that an energy drink sitting to your right?
Very much. I have since having kids, I love my kids. They're at home with my beautiful wife, 4 and 1. Love them to death, but they are early risers, and because of that, I am now a coffee drinker. So I will definitely be at least one cup of coffee in the morning as I'm getting prepped, and I will probably find another cup of coffee once I get to the field. But, hey, that's just part of it. Again, thankful to be here, thankful to represent Auburn, because as you guys know, man, I mean, this is a dream getting to do what we do.
Yes, sir.
And, again, just thankful to be here.
Hey. If another cup of coffee means Thursday, another one Friday, it sounds like a pretty good problem to have. We're all going to be tuned in. We appreciate your time as always. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Hey, guys, thanks so much. War Eagle, thanks for having me on.
Britt Bowen, voice of Auburn women's basketball and Auburn softball, as Auburn takes care of Missouri in the first round of the SEC softball tournament, taking on Texas A&M tomorrow morning. He mentioned it, a 9:45 broadcast time, a 10 o'clock first pitch. Auburn still needs a little bit of help. They need a couple of wins, at least to make the quarterfinals, if not probably into the semis, to try and get their eligibility, to get their bid for the postseason. But, hey, you can't get that unless you get the first one, and Auburn did just that. They win it 6-2 in round one, and he mentioned it's all six of those runs coming in the last two innings, a four-run spark in the top half of the sixth and two more insurance runs in the top half of the seventh. So Weagle 91.1 FM, I know the station very well from our time over at Weagle with Mr. Britt, and so we appreciate his time, and again, appreciate not only his time, but his friendship, his leadership, and I can speak on it. I know Jacob can as well. That's where we got our start, and forever appreciative for everything that he's done for us. So anytime that we're able to speak with him, man, you know that I love being able to do so. We will take a break. We will come back, and we'll wrap up the Tuesday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Man, what a great show it's been here this afternoon. We appreciate Britt Bowen, the host, or the voice, rather, of Auburn women's basketball, Auburn softball in there as well, giving us all of his updates from Lexington as Auburn defeats Missouri in round one of the SEC softball tournament. Also, some news on the women's basketball side of things. Man, you go and look at that Instagram page. I mean, there is just signed. A whole lot of excitement being built, much less the core that Larry Vickers is able to keep inside Neville Arena. And so things are trending upwards for Auburn women's basketball. I'm really excited to see what year two looks like on the plains. We also had Ryan Hetzler of Auburn Baseball, the closer, joining us to get our number two started, get all of his thoughts on the series win over Texas A&M, Auburn's fifth straight SEC series win. And so really, really appreciative of his time and how suavemente worked its way into fruition. And it's so funny here. You hear so many of these pitchers that were really good hitters. He said he was a switch hitting shortstop all throughout high school until his junior year. And he really focused on pitching because that's where he found the enjoyment. And then lowering the arm slots, getting that release point and figuring out, okay, I have a pretty lively fastball. That slider's pretty filthy as well. Let's move you into that closer role. It's so funny how you see the athletic careers work out for everybody. But appreciate him for joining us on the show. Also appreciate Jacob Goins. Again, not with us here in the studio, but got us going in hour number one, talking all things SEC football. We talk strength of schedule in terms of all of the SEC and the rankings and how Auburn was the second easiest SEC schedule in terms of strength of schedule. We talked about whether or not we agreed with that. Also, the top five in there as well. Also did our deep dive on Auburn baseball. On tomorrow's show, tomorrow's what? Wednesday, we'll have Jordan Hill of Dogs 24-7, and then Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and The Barn. Double D Wednesday, and it'll also be Jacob Goins Wednesday back with us in the studio, we think. I mean, we thought so until like 1:15 this afternoon, so I don't know. Guess it's another reason for you to be here with us between 2 and 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. For Jacob Goins, I'm Christian Griffin. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you later.